A few years ago, we started this minhag of learning Chorban-related things or Dvarim HaMutarim things you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av at night. It should be noted, and I think I try to point this out each year, that in addition to the Yisr of Talmud Torah on Tisha B'Av, even though there's an exception of things that are Dvarim HaRayim, things that are sad and that express the sadness of the day, you're still not supposed to be makil kihilos. You're not supposed to get groups of people together learning in a public type of forum, because that itself is considered too much for Tisha B'Av. So the style of this evening may seem like it's just I'm learning by myself, reading a Gemara. Because that's what it is. So that's what it's meant to be. And anyone who wants to listen in, more than welcome to do so. You're also more than welcome at any point. You don't have to wait for me to finish. I don't even see who's here, if anybody's here. I see a couple of people here right now. But I assume, I'm not sure how long I'm going to go. But it's just learning the basic, simple storyline of the Chorban Agadita. Last year we did Iyov. I was hoping after 2 years of doing the Chorban Agadita and 1 year of doing Iyov that we wouldn't have to come back to anything again. But here we are again. So we're starting in Maseches Gittin on Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis is where the Chorban Agadita begins, and it's on the fourth wide line of the page on Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis. So the Gemara tells us, "Amar Rabbi Yochanan, May Dichsiv Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid Umak Shelibo Yipol Bara'a." What is the pasuk in Mishlei talking about when it says that a person is praiseworthy if he's always worried that he didn't cause himself some distress or do something that's going to lead to something terrible? And someone who's always confident and always thinks that everything's going to be fine, ultimately he's going to stumble and he's going to suffer from something stupid that he had done in the past, and he had this false sense of confidence, this hubris that ultimately is going to lead him to falter. So what is this pasuk being meramis to? What is this pasuk teaching us? So the Gemara tells us, Akamtza ubar kamtza charev Yerushalayim. It's because of stories like the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, but specifically this story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, that Yerushalayim was destroyed. Atarnagola v'tarnagolasa charev tor malka. Now the Gemara is going to tell us something we're not going to get to for a while. On Daf Nun Zayin, we're going to have a story about a tarnagol and a tarnagolas that caused the city of Tor Malka, which is Har HaMelech, to be destroyed. And Ashako de Rispak, Chorav Beitar, because of a story that happened with a side panel of a chariot for women, the city of Beitar was destroyed, and that also is going to be much later on Daf Nun Zayin. But first, the Gemara is going to tell us probably the most famous story in the entire Chorban Agadita, which is the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. And we'll see if this is one of those things about the depth of Torah, is that no matter how many times you learn it, no matter how many times you see the same story, it seems that each time something new emerges, some ha'ara, something new comes out, some lesson to derive. So let's see if we're able to find anything that we haven't thought of before. Akamtza bar kamtza charev Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was destroyed because of the story of Kamtza and bar kamtza, and the story goes as follows. Du gavra derachme kamtza ubaldavave bar kamtza. There was a guy whose good friend that he loved, his name was Kamtza, but someone who he really didn't like, who he had a terrible relationship, was named Bar Kamtza. There's a whole discussion about what the relationship was between Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. The Pasha Pshat, one would imagine, is that it was a father and son. One was Kamtza, the other was the son of Kamtza, was Bar Kamtza. In fact, that's what the Marsha writes, that's why it was so easy to confuse them for each other. They were family members, it was a father and son. And that's why Bar Kamtza would have imagined that he might have been invited to the Seuda, because this is his father's good friend. And sometimes If you have a good relationship in the family, even if you don't have a good relationship with everybody in the family, you might want to reach out to those you don't have a good relationship with, because their father's your good friend, their siblings are your good friends. It would be awkward to constantly be faced with a situation where you're friendly with some members of the family and not with others, and every time you see them as a family, it would lead to this awkward situation. So you could understand that Bar Kamtza, you know, was one of the kashas people asking the story. What was Bar Kamtza thinking? Why did he think he was invited to the Suda? Well, if he was actually Kamtza's son, you understand why he was thinking he was invited to the Suda. It happens to be that's clearly not Rashi's understanding. Rashi writes Kamtza Bar Kamtza. Rashi says, Kach Shem Shnei Yehudim. These are the names of two Jews. Of course, these are the names of two Jews. What's Rashi teaching me? Rashi seems to be teaching me they're not related. They're two random Jews, two unrelated Jews, and this happens to be their names. They happen to have similar names, and that's how the invitations got mixed up. The idea that he was a good friend of Kamtza, even though he was an enemy of Bar Kamtza, is important in a couple of respects. It's important because obviously the story wouldn't make much sense without it, without the fact that he's a good friend of Kamtza, because why would he invite Bar Kamtza if not for the easy confusion? But some of the Achronim point out that it could be important for another reason as well. You know, we often confuse the issue of Sinas Chinam with the issue of V'ahavta L'Re'echa Kamocha. Those are different things. V'ahavta L'Re'echa Kamocha is the positive. People who have good relationships, who have good friends. Sinas Chinam is the negative, when you have bad relationships. Not everybody who violates Sinas Chinam also violates V'ahavta L'Re'echa Kamocha in the fullest sense. Meaning a lot of times, there are people that have very good relationships with lots and lots of people, and they'll almost hide behind that or use that as the excuse as to why they could have such bad relationships with others. It's not my fault. I'm a good person. Look how many friends I have. I have this overwhelming sense of Avas Reim. It's just that this guy is impossible. This person is an impossible person to get along with. And that's part of the problem, is that because he had people that he loved, he had people that he got along with very well. So that's that often leads him to believe that it's not his fault, and he has nothing to no reason to make any extra special effort to try to smooth things over with those that he doesn't get along with, because haraya, look at how many friends I have. So anyway, so we had these two people, in his life, Avutsu Udasa. And this fellow made a su'uda. Amle l'shame zil aisili kamtza. So he told the shamash, I want you to go bring me kamtza, invite for me kamtza. Ozel aisile bar kamtza. And he went, and the shamash went and invited instead bar kamtza, who was his enemy. Asa ashkeche, the guy who was hosting the su'uda, came and he saw bar kamtza sitting at his su'uda. Davi Yosef, there he was sitting at his su'uda. Meaning, I'm paying however many dollars a plate, and I'm paying for that guy. That guy shows up to my su'uda. Amalei michti. So he says, I don't understand. Hu gavra bal devavadu gavrahu. You're my enemy. My bayisacha. Why would you come to my su'uda? Why are you coming to shtar my simcha? You're coming to cause a problem. What are you doing here? Kum pok. Get up and get out of here. I don't want you here. So Amalei Bar Kamtza says, Hol vasai, look, since I've already come, Shvakan, v'yevnalach d'mei madach elnush sina. You're right, you shouldn't have to pay for my plate. We're not friends. I'm not the kind of person you would normally invite. Maybe I thought you were reaching out and trying to make shalom, and obviously you weren't. But I'll pay for my plate. Just don't embarrass me. Don't make me leave. Don't throw me out of the entire su'uda. So Amalei lo, the Balabai says, I'm not maskim. I don't want you here. It so upsets me, it so bothers me to even see you here. And that speaks of a certain level of a relationship, that it's not just that you don't care about the person, but their very presence angers you. Just seeing the person makes the blood boil. It gets you all upset. So Amr Lei, so Bar Kamtza says, Yehiv nalach demei palga desuda saich. I'll tell you what, we'll go 50-50 on the entire party. I'll pay for half of the suda. Amr Lei, lo, says, I don't want you here. I can't. I'm not. You got to get out. I'll pay for the entire su'uda. No, I don't want you here. Nakte biyade, until he finally physically picks him up. Va'okme va'afke. He stands him up by grabbing him and he throws him out of the house. He physically removes him from the premises. So Amar hol v'havu yasi rabban v'lo michubei. So this fellow, this Bar Kamtza who is sitting at the suda, says to himself. Amar doesn't always mean that he verbalizes it, but this is something he said in his heart, something that he was thinking, and he said, if the Chachamim were sitting at this Su'udah, apparently this was an important Su'udah with many Chashuva guests, and they saw everything that happened, v'lo machubei, and they didn't say anything, they didn't object to the Balabayas taking me out. Shmamina kanicha lehu. It must be that they were okay with my bizayon, that it didn't bother them. Because of that, I'm going to go tell the Melech, I'm going to be malshin on them to the Melech, that that they're rebels, and as we'll see soon, that they're that they deserve significant punishment. It's interesting because he's already making a leap. He's making an assumption over here that because the Rabbanan were there and they didn't object, it means that they're okay with it. When you think, with our modern sensibilities, is everything you see that you don't object to something that you're okay with? Even parenting. Your child really believes that everything they do that you don't object to, it's not you picking your battles, it's that you're just okay with it, you're okay with every single thing you don't object to. And certainly with our modern sensibilities, a live and let live kind of world, we don't object to things. We sort of just, mind our own business. But that's not the way the Rabbanan are supposed to act. That's not the way leaders are supposed to act. When leaders see someone in pain, when they see someone suffering, they're supposed to do something about that. They're supposed to be nosei ba'olim chadero. They're supposed to appreciate what that suffering means. They're supposed to feel that suffering as if it's happening to them. And they shouldn't tolerate it. It's as if they were the victims of that suffering. Just like if they were the victims, they wouldn't tolerate it. They shouldn't tolerate it when it happens to someone else. Rabbi Fran tells the story where there was, at a hotel at some Shabbaton or something, some firm program on a hotel once. There was a woman who had twin daughters, and she left one of them at the table and brought the other one with her to wash, just for Netilas Sidaim. So she was gone for 2 minutes, and they were two-year-old kids. And she comes back, and the other one is gone. The one that she left at the table isn't there. So she starts going crazy. She picks up the daughter that she had with her and says, "Did anyone see a child who looks just like this? I'm looking for a child that looks just like this." And everyone does, what people do when someone's asking for help. They're in the middle of their meal, so they look to the right, they look to the left, because that's what you do. You have to pretend you're actually looking. And they go on with their meal. No, I don't see anyone. Not under my table. The kid's not in my lap, so, not my problem. And the woman's in a panic, and she runs out into the hallway, and she sees a group of Beis Yaakov girls. And she says to them, my child is missing. I don't know what happened. I just went to wash, and she's not here. My daughter looks like this." And one of the Beis Yaakov girls just takes command of the situation. She says, "Okay, let's get organized." And she starts appointing jobs, which, by the way, is what's needed in a situation like that. Instead of everyone running around like a chicken without a head, or everyone doing nothing because they're waiting for someone else to do something, just one person starts shouting out instructions. She says, "You look in the classrooms. You look in the other dining room. You look outside by the lawn. You look." And she started appointing everyone to look in different places. And one by one, the girls are coming back. Didn't see the child in my area. Didn't see the child in my area. And ultimately, a little while later, the girl who had taken charge was the one who ultimately found the child. And they said to her, "Where did you find the child?" She said, "Well, I found it in one of the classrooms. The child was under the desk in one of the classrooms." One of the other girls says, "I checked all the classrooms." "What do you mean you found?" "I saw they were empty." She said, "Well, did you really check under every single desk?" She said, "No, I didn't check under every single desk. I just took a look." And this one found the child. So the mother was very grateful. And the mother started talking to this girl. And the mother said, "You're made of different stuff. I mean, no one else acts like that." No one else makes it like it's their kid. No one else makes it like that they're as desperate to find this child as the mother is to find this child. Where did you learn such beautiful midos? And the girl said, to tell you the truth, I'm Leibi Kletzky's sister. The Ribbono Shel Olam taught her those midos in a very, very difficult way. But Bar Kamtza had the right to assume, Chachmei Yisrael, if they see an injustice, if they really feel his pain, if they really feel his embarrassment, if they really understand what's going on, they wouldn't just sit there. They wouldn't just let someone be hurt like that. So why taka did they? Why did they not do anything to help? So the Marsha explains, because there was this terrible problem of chanufa in that generation, that people like to flatter and get in the good graces of wealthy and powerful people, and therefore they don't want to be confrontational with powerful people. And that's what led this entire story to happen. So he said, so I'm going to go and I'm going to be Echul Buhu Kortza Beimalka. It's some sort of expression that Rishonim struggle with. I'm going to eat a kortza by the melech. How does that mean I'm going to tell on them? So Rashi says, because when people are malshin, when they go and they tell on somebody, it's standard that they would go and have a bite to eat at the person's house as a way of, developing the relationship and strengthening whatever the story is that they're telling by having it just in a context and not just, in the context of a social gathering and not just going to tell. So I'm going to go have kurtza. Kurtza also, the Rishonim, I'm not sure what kurtza is. Some of the Rishonim understand that it's a lashon of kritzas einayim, that people make eye motions sometimes. People think that lashon hara and rechilus and all the terrible averos that could be violated with speech can only be violated with actual speech, but it's not really true. Sometimes it's a glance, it's a look. Someone does something in shul that you find funny or strange, and you shoot a glance across the room to your friend, so you can enjoy that moment of mocking another Jew. And that's kortza. That's kritza seinayim. So that's the expression that he's using over here. So Azal, he went, Amarle le Kesar, Mardubach, Yehudai. The Jews are rebelling against you, he tells the Kesar. Amarle miyemar, Kesar, to his great credit, does not immediately accept that Lashon Hara. How do I know that you're telling me the truth? Why would I trust that? Which is a part of the story that's often overlooked. He wanted proof. How many of our enemies would have been all too happy to accept such Lashon Hara without asking for any proof? Without looking for, I don't need any proof. Oh, you tell me, so I believe you. Inherently trusting about something like that. And sometimes we're like that. We're more trusting of Lashon Hara than the Kesar was about Lashon Hara against the Jewish people. Whether it's because we already have a negative opinion of the person, or we have, we just happen to believe things that people tell us automatically, but we're not allowed to. It's halacha. You're not allowed to believe Lashon Hara, even in the situations where you're allowed to listen to Lashon Hara. Chavetz Chaim talks about a situation where, let's say, your wife is struggling with something. Someone wronged her, someone did something terrible to her, and the way she has to deal with it, she needs to speak about it. That's her, men and women deal with things differently. Very often the way a man will deal with it is he'll just try to forget about it, and he'll lock himself up somewhere and just try to, ignore it. women often don't understand that. They, you know, why don't you want to talk about it? Because this is the way I deal with it, by not talking about it. And very often, people need to talk. The Gemara says two types of people. Sometimes yishichena, sometimes yishichena la'acherim. Some people need to just keep it to themselves, and that's the way they'll best deal with it. Sometimes they need to speak it out. They need to yishichena la'acherim. Sometimes a woman will be talking to her friends or to her mother or whatever, telling about all this terrible thing. The husband's like, you can't fix it anyway. Stop telling everybody. Stop talking so much. Maybe he should be a better listener and she wouldn't have to talk to so many other people about it. But the Chafetz Chaim says the husband has to listen. That's the din in such a case. He has to, if that's her therapy, he's got to listen to let her get it off her chest. But even as he's listening, there are many, many rules that he's got to follow. One of them is he's not allowed to believe a word she's saying. Not that he thinks that she's a liar, but perhaps she misunderstood. Perhaps the person had something else going on in their lives at the time. He shouldn't believe that the person was as vicious or vindictive or horrible as she's saying. He should believe that it was an honest misunderstanding. You shouldn't tell her that, probably, right away. But that's part of... we're not supposed to believe Lashon Hara under any circumstances. So, the Kesar, to his great credit, says, Mi Yemar, who says that the Jewish people are rebelling against me? I don't have any evidence of that. So Amalei Bar Kamsa says to the Kesar, sure, I'll give you evidence. Shadaluhu Korbana, send them a korban. And see what they do with it. See if they're makrav, such a korban that's sent by the Kesar. Azal shadar b'yada igla tilta. So he sent the best. He sent an igla tilta. What is an igla tilta? So that's a machlokas rishonim. Some say it means the third born from its mother. Because when the mother first starts having offspring, the mother's not strong yet, and therefore the offspring are not super strong. When the mother gets a little older and continues to have offspring, she's already on the decline, and therefore her offspring's not... But the third one, that's the most likely to be the strongest and the best. I often remind my siblings that I'm the third child of my parents. The Gemara in Erevin, where it also says Iglatilta, Rashi comments that it doesn't mean third born. It means one third of its growth. There's a fine balance between meat that's too soft and meat that's too tough. So you got to shech the animal at just the right time, where the meat is just the right tenderness. So a three-year-old animal is just the right tenderness. Okay, whatever the iglatilta is, this was a really good carbon. This was going to be an animal that was going to have really great meat. Badi de Ka'asi Shadaba Muma. So as it was being brought to the Beis HaMikdash, Bar Kamtza makes a mum in the animal. Where? Beniv Sfasayim. And that obviously, the meaning of that is clear. In the upper lip of the animal. And this is because of the way we speak about each other. And we speak to each other. And that's how this story started, with how rough the Balabayas was with Bar Kamtza. Va'armila, and some say bedukin sheba'ayin. It's he made some sort of wound on the eye. Also, the way we look at each other, we spoke about before, kritza seinayim. Why these two places? Because duchta del didan havamuma l'ditu lav mumahu. These are the kinds of mumen that in halacha we would consider them a mumen. You're not allowed to bring an animal with such a mumen on the mizbeach. But for a guy, being makrav a korban, they would never consider it a mumen. For a guy, they would only consider something that's mechusar ever. If it's missing a limb, they would consider that a mumen. They wouldn't consider this a mumen. So savar abanan lekruve. The chamim thought, okay, we're in a tough spot over here. The kesar sent us this animal. We have to be makrav the korban mishum shalom malchus, because of shalom malchus. The post can point out, Magen Avraham points out, that you see that you're allowed to violate a los haseh for shalom malchus. That it's an isur d'oraisa to be makrav bal mum on the mizbeach, and yet they're willing to violate it for shalom malchus. A lot is allowed for shalom malchus. This was a major topic of conversation of karov l'malchus and these kinds of things this year, for obvious reasons in our community, in the Jewish community. But it's a question of what you're allowed to do for Shalom Achos. Over here, the long-term ramifications were significant. So Amar Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis was there, and he said, Yomru Bali Mumin, Kraven Legabim Mizbeach. We can't do this, because if we bring this Karban, then people are going to say that a Balmum is able to be brought on the Mizbeach. Now it's interesting, he didn't say we can't do this because it's Aser. He didn't say we can't do this because of the Aveira of bringing a Balmum on the Mizbeach. That itself would not have been the problem, because as we said, Shalom Alchus, for Shalom Alchus, you're allowed to bring a Balmum on the Mizbeach. Question was the long-term ramifications. Short-term, you're right. You're allowed to violate this one-time Isser in order to create Shalom Alchus. But if it's going to cause a Ziyuf HaTorah, it's going to cause a situation where people are going to think the wrong halacha, they're not going to understand the Torah, they're going to think something wrong about the Torah, and that's going to be lasting. You know, the Gemara in Bava Basra talks about when you teach a child something that's incorrect. You know, what do we assume happens? Do we assume, the Shabeshta Memela Nafak, that when you teach the child, the mistakes will fall away over time, and he'll remember, you know, the core principles that you taught him? Or do we assume Shabeshta Kivan to all, that when you ingrain a mistake, it will stay ingrained, and it will be there for life? So we have to be concerned about that what the long-term ramifications are going to be. We don't sugarcoat what the Torah says. We don't change what the Torah says. We may present it in a palatable way, and we should, and that's the part of the Kavanah Torah, that we should present it in a way that people could appreciate it. But we can't lie about what the Torah says, even if what the Torah says does not fit Western sensibilities and modern sensibilities. The Torah is eternal, and we have no right to be mezayif the Torah in any way whatsoever. I'm often asked the Shaila, people have to teach a chassan who's a friend of the family or something, and the guy is not really religious, and it's like a big deal that he's taking chassan classes to begin with. So like, you know, how little can you teach him, you know? How much can you pretend doesn't exist in halacha? So I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but my approach is you have to teach him the halacha. You have to teach him everything. You could tell him what's a daraisa, what's a drabanan, what's a minhag. I think that's in general. When you learn halacha, you can do that. But you can't pretend that things don't exist. And he'll do what he does. And maybe one day he'll do tshuva and he'll know that there's more to do and that there's a higher standard to live up to. So this was Zechariah ben Avkul, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis' concern, that it wasn't for the right now, it was for the long term. So Savar L'mitzalei, so they said, okay, well, our other option is we can kill Bar Kamsa, the Lolez of Lema, so that we could stop it right here, and he's not going to be able to go and be malshin on us. Amar Lo Rabbi Zechariah, again, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis pipes up, you know, he's ben Avkulis, he says, Yomru, Matil Mumbakachim Yeharek, then everyone's going to say that if you Matil Mumbakachim Yechayiv Misa, and that also is a Ziyuf HaTorah. So Amr Rabbi Yochanan and Vasnusa Shal Bizchari ben Avkulas, Hechrivas Peisenu Vesorfas Echalenu Veglisanu Meartzenu. It was the humility of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas that destroyed our Beis HaMikdash, burnt our Hechal, and caused us galus from our land. Martz Chayis points out, what does his anivus have to do with it? Because he says, Min Adin, they could have brought this carbon, because it was a Balmum, and it was Sakana to Klal Yisrael. Also, min hadin, they could have killed Bar Kamtza, because Bar Kamtza was a rodev. Habar la hargecha, hashkem la argo. Someone is threatening to kill you, you kill him. That's absolutely a halacha. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis says, Maritz Chayis was afraid to paskin. Min hadin, he knew these halachas. He knew you're allowed to be makar the animal. He knew that you're allowed to kill. But he was afraid to paskin. He had this fear of hora'a, this fear of psak. He didn't want to rely on his own judgment. But he was the one everyone was listening to. So sometimes, you know, a person may be in a position where he can accomplish something, but he feels too small. Who am I to get involved? Who am I to say something? Well, one thing we know about Zechariah ben Avkulis was that everyone was listening to him. So whatever he thought of himself, everyone else thought that he was the person to turn to. And he had this fear of psak. He was afraid. I think this is one of the only times where Moshe quotes a Maritz Chayis. He quotes this in his tshuvas. He quotes this Maritz Chayis. He likes this Maritz Chayis.
Doesn't it sound like what he's saying is that you paskin the first time that no, we're not going to do it, and then paskin again, no, we can't kill him?
Yeah, so the Maritz Chayes understands that lahalacha, he knew that he was wrong on both of those things. He just shevi al tase, meaning he landed with a shevi al tase both times, and that's a certain lack of assertiveness in his
misplaced
anivus. Yeah, anivus is a very, very critical midah, obviously. But like we've pointed out, the Orach HaTzaddikim has a whole sefer all about how there's no such thing as a midah that's purely good or purely bad, and the anivus of Zechariah ben Avkulos was a bad anivus in this instance. Yeah, I mean, that's the way Maritz Chayes at least understands the Gemara. You know, the Gemara has an expression that koach de'atera adiv. So why is it koach de'atera adiv? This is machlokas Rishonim, but the way the majority of Rishonim understand is because anyone can be machmir. So Rashi explains, it's easy to be machmir. It's easy to be cautious in Pesach. But it takes something. It takes a certain confidence and a certain, a certain chutzpah, a good kind of chutzpah, to not be so cautious, to be confident enough in your psak, to be able to be more assertive in psak. Unfortunately, I think in our generation we see a lot of the opposite. We see people who are more than happy to be assertive because they think they once read in a kitzur book, you know, whatever, without a full understanding of the sugya. So we have. I don't think our generation suffers from too much anivus. Shadu Levayu the Neron Kesar. So the Kesar heard that the Jewish people were not bringing this carbon. So he understood that Bar Kamtza must have been correct. The Jewish people are rebelling against him. So he sends Neron Kesar to go fight with the Jews, to go kill them. Kikasi, so when Neron Kesar draws close to Yerushalayim, he wants, you know, this is it's not a small thing to fight with such an important nation on the world stage. And he wants to make sure that he's doing the right thing. So he looks for a simin min ha-shamayim. Shada gira lemizrach. Asa nafal b'Yerushalayim. He shot an arrow toward the east, and the arrow landed in Yerushalayim. Lemarav asa nafal b'Yerushalayim. He shot an arrow in the opposite direction to the west, landed in Yerushalayim. La'arba ruchas ha-shamayim. He shot the arrow in all four directions, asa nafal b'Yerushalayim, each time it landed in Yerushalayim. Marsha asked the question, one of those directions was probably unnecessary, right? I mean, the direction of Yerushalayim, it's obviously going to land in Yerushalayim. So what does that really show you if you shot the arrow and it actually lands in Yerushalayim, when you shot it toward Yerushalayim? Okay, so he says maybe they were too far from Yerushalayim for it to have landed in Yerushalayim by natural, natural way. So he took this as a simon that he was going to be successful, that it's time to go after Yerushalayim. But then, Amale Liyanuka Psokli Psukech, he didn't want to rely on this alone. He went to a child and he said, tell me a pasuk that you learned. It's also a fascinating idea that means something. That you can go to a kid and just say, tell me your pasuk, and whatever he says is going to mean something to you. So Shachta points out that you only find this with psukim. You have this notion of the Goral Agra, for example. You only find this with actual Torah Shebichsav. We don't find such a thing with any other books, with any other... And if you do it with other books, you know, you take your encyclopedia or something, in the days where there used to be an encyclopedia, so you would, and you open it up to a random page and you think that there's some sort of message over there, so that's an Isidaraisa, Lo Sinachshu. So it only works with Torah Shebichsav for some reason. So he said, "Psokli psukech, tell me your pasuk." So Amalei, the kid said, "V'nasati es nekmasi be'edom biad ami Yisrael." Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take revenge against Edom for what they do to Am Yisrael. So Neron Kesar realizes what's going on over here. He realizes he's going to be successful in defeating Yerushalayim if he tries, but he also realizes what that means. He could be the guy that defeats Yerushalayim, but he's not going to be a hero in history, and he's going to be defeated ultimately by the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to avenge their blood. So Amar, he says, Kutcha Brichu Boy Lechruve Beis. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in destroying his Beis HaMikdash. But he wants me to be the fall guy. He's going to take it all out on me afterwards. Arak va'azal v'igayir. Nafik minei Rab Meir. Unbelievable. The Gemara says, knowing full well that the Jewish people are about to suffer a horrendous calamity, the Churban HaBayis, he's megayir under such circumstances. And what's the schar for a mesiris nefesh like that? Rabbi Meir comes from him. The Rambam writes in his Hakdama to the Alei Chazaka, Rabbi Meir was a son of a Geret Tzedek. Meaning, the Rambam understood this Gemara quite literally. Nafak minei Rabbi Meir doesn't mean it was his great-grandchild. He was the son of Neron Kesar. Mamish. Others understand, not literally, that he was his son, must have been a descendant of his. But he was Zoche to a Rabbi Meir. Which is also a fascinating idea, because Meir, it doesn't take a big Doresh Shemos to realize that Meir relates to the idea of bringing light to the Jewish people. There's that funny line in the Chidah, in Shema Gedolim, where the Chidah quotes the Ran. I think it was the Ran, that in the Ran's family they had two people to name after. One of them was, I think, Meir, and one of them was Yair. And they didn't know who to name after, which grandfather on which side. So they decided that one is Meir, one is Yair, so they named the kid Shneor. And that's how the name Shneor came into being. So, but it relates, obviously, to bringing light, Rabbi Meir. That's what the Gemara says, that Rabbi Nuhurai is Rabbi Meir. That causes problems with the last Mishnah and Kiddushin, but it's amazing that he was Zoche to Rabbi Meir, to the one who brings light to the Jewish people. Why? It's not just that he was Mechabed the Torah, it's that he was Mechabed the Mikdash. Meaning, the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Masechet Baba Basra that when Hordus killed all the Chachamim, that he was Mechabed Nero Shalolam. He wanted to know how to do tshuva. He made this little mistake of killing all the chachamim except for his brother-in-law, who he only blinded. And after his brother-in-law passed the bechina, he wanted to know how to do tshuva. So he was told, you were mechaba nero shalolam, so you have to rekindle the nero shalolam. So what do? Herod's temple. You have to make improvements on the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is the Nero Shel Olam, is the or of the world, and the Talmidei Chachamim are the Nero Shel Olam. So it's a Mida Keneged Mida. Because he chose not to be the one that destroys the Beis HaMikdash, a Mida Keneged Mida. It's an amazing thing. You know, I've mentioned several times that I've gotten involved in Geirus. I'm on a Geirus based in this past year. I've done it for a whole year. I got a letter in the mail a couple of months ago from a guy who we were Megayer his wife last summer. And he wrote me, you don't get letters very often. I just normally just go straight from the mailbox to the garbage. You know, whatever's coming goes straight into the garbage usually. Unless it's like a letter from camp or something. You know. But the letter said that the guy was nervous because he started listening to Shiurim and he started getting involved in learning. And he keeps hearing this word Yichus. And he keeps hearing about the importance of Yichus and how important Yichus is. And he's like, what's my kid's yichus going to be like? They're not going to have yichus. You know, he said, my parents are self-hating Jews and my wife's parents are Christians. You know, where's the yichus? And the answer is, you make your own yichus. Your sister-in-law wrote an article. You make your own yichus. And can you have a greater yichus than this? That a person makes the decision not to be the one, knowing that he'll be successful, and he's moser nefesh, and he chooses not to be the one. I have to tell you, so many times we meet people, Sometimes we meet people and it's like, okay, there's no chance. But sometimes you meet people and the mysterious nefesh that they go through to become a Jew. Guy with a Muslim mother who wants to kill him for wanting to become a Jew. And I don't know how figurative he was being about that either. But he desperately wants to become a Jew. So people are mosu nefesh sometimes. You have to respect that. And we have a mitzvah to love a ger many, many times over in the Torah. We have to be very careful the way we talk about gerim. Stam, we have to be very, very careful. People ask, what do you think about this one's gerus, that one's gerus, this public figure? Just be careful. You talk about these things, you're probably in violation of several Isurim Daraisa. Shadri Levayel Aspasinus Kesar. So instead, the Kesar sent Aspasinus Kesar to go fight a battle, to go take Yerushalayim. Asat Sarala Tlashne. So he went and he laid siege around the city for 3 years. Maral points out that the number three is always big in Judaism. Everything happens in threes or multiples thereof. There's Kohanim Levim Yisraelim, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, etc. We're an Am Tlisai, the Gemara says. We're a nation of threes. So 3 years around Yerushalayim, and it probably relates to what the Gemara is about to tell us. Havuba Hanut Lasa Atiri. There happened to have been three wealthy people in Yerushalayim, extraordinarily wealthy people. Nakdimun ben Goryon, ben Kalba Savua, ben Tzitzis HaKeses. These three extraordinarily wealthy people who took upon themselves to support the Jews of Yerushalayim. That's what after the Churban, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Ksuvos, that when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was going around surveying the damage, he saw this young girl who was picking barley, which is generally considered to be animal food. But not only was she picking barley, she was picking barley out of the excrement of animals. She was underneath the animals as they were defecating so that she could find some undigested pieces of barley because she was so hungry. That's how bad the starvation was. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees her and she pulls herself together, the Gemara in Ksubas tells us. And he says, Biti bas mi'at, whose daughter are you? And she says, Bas Nakdimon ben Gurion anochi. I'm the daughter of Nakdimon ben Gurion. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comments on the wealth of her father's house, how extraordinarily wealthy they are. They were. And how quickly things like this can be lost. A person has to ask themselves in life frequently what really matters. The disproportionate amount of effort and time and energy and emotion that we put into things that ultimately don't really matter, that are here today, gone tomorrow, is a problem for us. So Nakdimun ben Gurion Naktalo Chama Bavuro. Nakdimun ben Gurion was such a special person that the sun stopped in its tracks for him. That's a story the Gemara tells us in Maseches Tainis, that he promised the governor 12 springs of water for Ole Regalim. If up until a certain point it doesn't rain, he's going to give him 10 kikaros of kesef for it. And when the time came and it hadn't rained, and it was already mincha time, so he davened and it rained. And the Hegemon said that, the rain came after Shkia. So you owe me the money. So he davened again, and the clouds dispersed, and the sun was still out. So it wasn't yet Shkia. But that was a nace, because by all rights, the sun should have set already. This was Nakdim ben Gurion. Ben Kalvas Vushikal and Nichlas Basic Shurav Kakelev Yozik Shusavea. Anyone who came into his house starving like a dog went out when they were satiated. It's also interesting. That's quite a graphic expression. Starving like a dog. And that's how he gets the name. Kalba Savua. People who came like a kelev. So why does it matter that they come like a kelev? So sometimes guests are very nice and polite and lovely to have over. And sometimes they come in like a dog. But he made sure that they were all satisfied. And he treated them all the same. Even the one who came like a kelev. Others say that he was a descendant of Kalev ben Yefuna. So kalba has nothing to do with the kelev. It has to do with... It's just coincidence. And the Gemara uses that expression. But Pasha Pshat is that he got that name because people starving like dogs. I remember that was the story that... Reb Shlomo Twersky, Zichron Levracha, used to love to tell about his father. How his father was a Hasidic Rebbe, and how on Sukkot there was this guy that no one wanted anything to do with. The guy, you know, he smelled, he was inappropriate, he didn't speak nicely. But no one wanted anything to do with this guy. And by the Rebbe's tish in the sukkah, he invited that guy to sit next to the Rebbe. And people said, Rebbe, you know, we could take care of, you know, we can get rid of him for you. You don't have to sit next to him the whole time. And his response was that, you know, when I go up Lachrimei Vasrim, I'm going to say, I would really love to sit next to Avram Avinu. I'd love to sit next to Moshe Rabbeinu. And what? Avram Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, they're going to look at my neshama and they're going to say, ach, such a neshama, it smells unpleasant, doesn't belong next to an Avram Avinu and a Moshe Rabbeinu. And I'll be able to say, when I was down there on earth, there was no one that was beneath me. I would sit next to anybody. I would treat anybody with respect. So even a person who comes, nichnas kekelev, comes in like a dog, to treat him with respect. It's not always easy. You know, I'm embarrassed to say, but on those Sundays sometimes, you know, when the lines start forming outside the door, and sometimes people are aggressive, and, you know, sometimes you're just really not in the mood, or you said, please, just everyone from the car, you know, come now at one time. And then, like, it's like, one more. Then one more, you know, it's like it's not easy to always be patient and kind. Just last night I was learning with the chassan, and two guys came collecting tzedakah. So I'm learning with a Talmud, you know, so I was super nice because you have to show the Talmud that I have to be nice. So we started schmoozing with one of these guys, and he was telling us, like, he's unbelievable, like, he learned by the Panovich Rav so many years ago, and you know, telling us stories about the old days in Panovich, just unbelievable. He had a wealth of Divrei Torah and information to share. But most of the time, we would never know that because we would, you know, rush them out the door. Certainly not ask if they, you know, we can get them a drink or anything like that. So someone comes in like a kelev. Sometimes they come in like a kelev. You should make sure that they feel like a mensch, that they don't go out feeling like a kelev. Not always easy, but these are things that Jews do. We have to do these things, and ultimately we'll be enriched for it, not in a financial way, but we'll meet interesting people with heartbreaking stories. Very often, no fault of their own. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses Shreisa Tzitziso Negreris Algabi Ksasos. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses got his name because his tzitzios would drag on cushions. Because the halacha is you're not allowed to allow your tzitzis to drag on the floor. It's disrespectful to the tzitzis. So he hired these guys to come with, you know, cushions underneath his tzitzis so that they would be treated with respect. And that's how he got the name, Tzitzis HaKeses. It's a little bit of a strange thing to do, no? you think cut the tzitzis a little shorter, or I don't know, there's got to be a better use of funds than hiring guys to run around with cushions to catch your tzitzis. But there was nothing that was too much, nothing too expensive for covet of a mitzvah, I guess. Others say, no, tzitzis hakesas has nothing to do with cushions, it's that his chair was amongst the gedolim of Rome. And they were mechabidim, and they considered him amongst the chashuvei Rome. And he was still such a valuable and important member of the Jewish community who would do anything for other Jews, and it would help support other Jews. And that's not always so easy. Sometimes they give you all the covet in the world, and you start believing it, and you start thinking you don't need anybody else. That was the message Mordechai gave to Esther. Mi yodeim le'is kazos higata l'malchus. At times like this, you know, when you think like you have it made, you're probably just here so that you can be there for the Jewish people. That was this Bentzitz HaKesses. He never lost that that perspective. The Chassam Sofer said in his Hesped for Yosef David Zinsheim, who was a member of Napoleon's Sanhedrin. Napoleon appointed a Jewish Sanhedrin. And I think he was the Av Beis Din, Napoleon's Sanhedrin. And he was given all sorts of great kavod. And the Chassam Sofer said in his Hesped that, you know, it says in Chumash Bereishis, at the end of Chumash Bereishis, that the brothers came back and reported to Yaakov that Kiod Yosef Chayv Hu Moshel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, that he's Yosef's alive and he rules over all of Mitzrayim. That was the first thing Yaakov Avinu heard, that Yosef rules over, not, he's alive, one, and two, he rules over Eretz Mitzrayim. Says the Chassam Sofer, Yaakov cares about whether he rules over, tell me that he's basically religious, tell me that he still remembers his father, tell me that, you know, some of the life lessons that I spent so many years teaching him, you know, sunk in and stayed with him. Says the Chassam Sofer, no, that's exactly what they were telling him. He could be in a position like that and Mitzrayim could rule over him. But he didn't allow that to happen. Mitzrayim doesn't rule over him. The culture of Mitzrayim doesn't rule over him. Hu Moshel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. With all the kavod they gave him, making him viceroy, Hu Moshel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. That's what Chassam Sofer said by Rav Yosef David Zinsheim. With all the kavod that they gave him, he was Moshel. He allowed the values of the Torah to ultimately decide his direction in life, and everything else was just a means to achieve that which the Torah wants him to achieve. I remember a number of years ago, many years ago, we were interviewing candidates for principals at Yeshiva Katana of Long Island before Rabbi Bajlan became the principal. So they recruited me to the search committee. I don't remember. I still haven't figured out exactly why. But one of the people we were talking to had grown up in the Five Towns and had moved away and had been away for a long time. And his first time back was the day that he came in for the interview. And he paid a visit to Central Avenue. So he said that someone said to him, isn't it impressive how the Jews have taken over Central Avenue? He says, it looks to me like Central Avenue has taken over the Jews, not that the Jews have taken over Central Avenue. So it's all a matter of perspective. So he was someone, this Ben Tzitzis HaKesses, who was amongst the Chashuvei Romi. So Chalam Berluhu Ana Zayin Lu B'chit Yusari. One of these Ashirim, one of these three rich people, said, "I'm going to supply all of the grain that's necessary, the wheat, the barley." V'Chalam Berluhu B'dechamro B'demilcho Mishcha. I'll provide whatever they need as far as wine and salt and oil. You have to realize wine was their primary drink. It's not like wine today, where it's a nice luxury and people enjoy it. But you know, wine was what they would drink with every suud. It was a really big deal not to drink wine for 9 days. Meaning, that was what they drank all the time. Chamar Medina means a beverage that they would treat the same way they would treat wine. Meaning that they would use it as the primary beverage. And one of them said, I'm going to supply all the wood that they need. The Rabbanu or Meshabeach, the wealthy fellow, doesn't identify which one is which, who offered to supply the wood. Rav Chista would give all of his keys over to his shamish, and he would trust him with everything except for the key to the warehouse where he kept his wood. Tam Rav Chista, akal b'dechiti b'yishitin akal b'detzivi. To use a warehouse of wheat, one warehouse of wheat, you need 60 warehouses of wood to light the ovens up to bake the bread that that wheat can make. So to agree to provide all of that wood, that is a significant, a much more significant promise than the promise of the food itself. You know, we would look at that and we would say, wood, who needs wood? You know, the other stuff is food stuff. There's things that they could actually use. So the Gemara makes a point of saying, no, the wood was the most critical. And this is also something that, you know, sometimes people are willing to donate, you know, that which seems glorious. It seems, you know, like something important. But, you know, ner lamar, you know, to pay for the electric bills of the yeshiva or whatever, or the shul, people aren't so interested in doing that. You can't put a plaque on the electric bill. So that's what he's paying. He's paying for the gas bill, you know, paying for the wood. So it doesn't seem as exciting, but it was extremely valuable, extremely, extremely expensive. It also gives you a little perspective in terms of the one of the sources, one of the primary sources for the notion of making a siyum, of the celebration of a siyum. Rashbam in Bava Basra writes, is when the family that was responsible for bringing the atzei ma'aracha, the wood for the ma'aracha, in the Beis HaMikdash, for the Mizbeach, for the burning on top of the Mizbeach, when they finished collecting and gathering all the wood. So they made a big party to celebrate the completion of that mitzvah. Why that? You know, for bringing wood. But this gives you a little appreciation for that, because all the korbanos and everything else that they're going to use that wood to, the, you know, to burn and to bring on the Mizbeach, it's a drop in the bucket when you compare it to the volume of the wood, and it's not easy being a wood chopper and schlepping and whatever. You know, the animal, you can walk along, it will walk itself, but the wood is very, very challenging, and they need a tremendous volume of it. So yeah, such a tremendous mitzvah that involves such tremendous effort, that's what they would make a siyum on. Havlu l'mezen esem v'chad shata. They had enough supplies to last them for 21 years. These wealthy people were so wealthy. No one would have had to even leave the city. So they didn't have to face the Romans. The Romans were outside the walls of the city. They were inside the walls of the city, and it was a completely self-sufficient city as it stood. Havbu hanu b'riyone, but there were these bad guys, these rough hooligans who were Jews, and they wanted to fight the Romans. You know, sometimes people are they're eager for a fight. So amalu rabbana, the rabbanan said to the b'riyone, nefuk v'navit shalma badayim. Let's go make shalom with the Romans. Let's try peace. Lo shafkinu. The Baryonim would not allow them to leave the city. They would not allow the Rabbanan to leave the city to try to make peace. They wanted a fight. Amr luhu, nepuk v'navid kirva ba'adayim. The Baryonim said to the Chachamim, I have an idea. Let's go fight with them. Amr luhu Rabbanan, lo mustayim milsa. The Rabbanan said, are you crazy? We're not going to be able to defeat them in any sort of battle. Ben Yoyada says that the Baryonim, he has such a poetic read of this Gemara, he says the Baryonim were confident that they would win because of the Esek HaTorah, because, you know, the Zuchus of Torah can save us. And what did the Rabbanim respond? Lo mistayeya milsa. Milsa is means a word. In our generation, people don't use their words correctly, says Ben Yoyada. They speak Lashon Hara. And the Zuchus of Torah is the great zuchus of using our mouths properly. Lo mistaye, it's not going to help because of milsa, because of the Lashon Hara we speak with those very same mouths. We're metame our mouths with Lashon Hara, so the zuchus of Torah is not going to be enough to help us. It paints the Baryonim in a very different light, meaning these Baryonim were not just thugs. They really believed in the zuchus of Torah. That's what the halacha is when it's when the Jewish people go out to war. So we have a kohen mishloach melchama. Kala yarei v'rach alevav. Whoever's afraid goes back. Yarei me'avera shabiyadav. Afilu sach ben tefila letefila. The Gemara says, even a small avera, a guy speaks between tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh. He's chozer me'archei melchama. He goes back, he doesn't fight the war. Because we want the zechuyos of Torah mitzvos on the battlefront. That's ultimately what's going to help us on the battlefront. So Shechta likes to tell over the story how the maskilim were putting on a play in Brisk. And they were making fun of the Torah and the halacha. So they had they were trying to paint the scene of the Kohen Mashiach Melchama announcing who goes back from the battlefront, and they had a stage jam packed with people, and the Kohen Mashiach Melchama says Mia Yish Asher Natakerem, you know, so a few people walk off the stage, and Mia Yish Asher Banabayis Chadash, a few more people, Asher Isa Isha, you know, Eris Isha Vlolakacha, a few other people walk off the stage. And Mia Ish Hayare Varach Alevav, and everyone walks off the stage. Except for the Chavetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Brisker. Two characters, they didn't get them actually. Actors playing the Chavetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Brisker. So they told Reb Chaim about this, that this was the play. It was a mockery, it was to make a mockery, that's your army, it's the Chavetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Brisker. And Reb Chaim Brisker said, Act Two is when we win the Melchama. Really believe in the Zechus HaTorah. That's what a Jew believes. A Jew should believe in the Zechus HaTorah. You know, sometimes we dig our heels into certain positions because we don't like one extreme, so we sort of dig our heels into the other extreme and we forget, we lose our bearings a little bit. You know, it may not sit well with us that so many people don't do army service in Medina Yisrael, because they want to learn full time. You know, why did the whatever the issues may be, but whatever our position is on something like that, we always have to remember that we definitely do believe in the Zechus of Torah. How that should play out practically, Rav Shechter says, maybe we should give bechinas to all the guys who are staying and learning, make sure that they're actually learning. But we definitely believe in the Zechus of Torah. And that the Zechus of Torah helps us on the battlefield. And we don't help anybody when we speak Lashon Hara. And when we speak badly of other segments of the Jewish people. That doesn't help anybody. Lo mistayeya milsa. Even the Zechus of Torah is not going to be able to overcome milsa. When we speak Lashon Hara. So Kamu, these Biryonim, wanted to force the residents of Yerushalayim to fight. So Kalinu Lahanu Amri Dechiti Yusa'ari. An unbelievable act of chutzpah. They burnt the storehouses of grain. Vavakafna. So naturally there was a famine. So what turned into what was a situation where we had plenty of time to figure it out. 21 years worth of food to be able to figure it out. And they burnt down, and they created a dire situation to press the issue, to make it happen sooner. The Rashash points out that Gemara never says they burnt the wood, only the chitim and sa'orim. And that was enough. Because if you don't have chitim and sa'orim, wood's not going to help you. What are you going to... The whole point of the wood was that you could then... obviously, the wood was, as we said before, a much greater volume, much easier to burn the chitim and sa'orim. It burns much more quickly also. Others say, no, they used the wood as firewood to burn the chitim and sa'orim. Okay, so they burnt and they created this famine. Marta Basbaitus Atirat de Yerushalayim Avia. This girl, Marta Basbaitus, was an Ashira. She was a wealthy woman, the wealthiest woman in all of Yerushalayim. And the reason we emphasize that point is that even though she was the wealthiest woman in all of Yerushalayim, we're going to see how it doesn't help. It doesn't help to have all the wealth in the world. It may not help. And we don't have any record of her providing the entire city with things the way the other three Ashirim provided the entire city with things. So their Ashirus provided them with a zechus to support the Jewish people, and that's an eternal zechus that they go down in history forever as the people who stood up and supported the Jewish people in their time of need. So when they were giving, they were actually amassing these tremendous zechus. The Gemara in Bava Basra and Tzedakah Sugyos tells us that when someone was being mevazvez all of his wealth that was accumulated by his ancestors by supporting poor people. So his family got upset. You know, your parents saved and saved and saved, and now you're just blowing it all. He said, no, my parents saved something that could provide them with some temporary satisfaction, some temporary feeling of wealth. I'm amassing something that no one will ever be able to take away, something that's eternal. And it really emerges from this story over here. Marta bas Baitus, for all the money in the world, it's not going to help her very much. These three Ashirim, because they were willing to give it all to the Jewish people in Yerushalayim, those zechuyos remain forever. So she was hungry. Shadarta l'shlucha, amalei, aisili smida. She told her shliach, buy me the nice fine flour that I normally like to eat. Adazel is daven. When he got there, it was all sold out. So he came back, Asa Amrla, Smida Leka, Chivarti Ika. And he told her, look, there's no more Smida, but there's the next level down. There's the, not the grade double A, but the grade A flour. So Amrla, Zielai Silish. So she said, okay, so get me the best available, get me that. So Adazel was Davin. He got there and the grade A flour was all sold out. Asa Amrla, Chivarti Leka, Gushkara Ika. He said, okay, they don't have grade A flour anymore. Now they have grade B flour. Amrla, Zielai Silish. She said, okay, get me grade B flour. Adazel Zavni went to get the grade B flour, that was gone. Asvarmalo, Gushkar Leka, Kimcha Desari Ika. There's grade C flour, there's barley flour. Amalay Zilaisili, go get me the grade C flour. Adazel Zavni, by the time he went, that was sold out as well. The obvious kasha is, you know, she's got to hire better help. He doesn't chap. Best available, that's what you should get. Keep coming back and asking questions. So there's something to it, obviously. Maral writes that this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing Hashkacha that it only ran out when she wanted it. Meaning, it would have been available as long as she didn't want it. That was HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing that this was a gezeira that she wasn't going to be able to eat. That no matter how much money she has, she was not going to be able to afford to feed herself. So as soon as she wanted it, that's when it was no longer available. I was thinking maybe to defend the shliach a little bit over here. The Gemara in Ksuvis, I think, tells us that there was a guy who used to have very high standards. No, a woman maybe had very high standards of living, and would only eat like an eglatilta, you know, that kind of thing. And one time they didn't have any money and they didn't have anything to eat, so the person who gave them tzedakah gave them lower quality food, and they were so not used to such low quality food that they died from eating it. So it could be that the shliach of Marta Bas Baitus thought that she would die if he brings back the lower quality stuff. But she was desperate enough and she said, bring it anyway. But he couldn't find it. So the shlifa Masana, she was going without any shoes. Amran, she said, Epuk vachli mishkachna midi lemechal. Let me go out to the streets and see if there's anything to eat. Ezla parta bakara, and she stepped right in animal excrement, umesa, and she died from that. It sort of lends a little bit of credence to my suggestion from a moment ago, that maybe he was choshish she would die from lower quality food. I mean, this is the kind of istinus that she was. She died from stepping barefoot into animal dung, which is not something to die from, unless you're an istinus. So Kariyala Rabbi Yochanan and Zakai, Haraka v'cha v'ha'anuga ashalonissa chafragla. So he said that pasuk about her, that she was so spoiled, that ultimately did her in. That's, I think, some important mussar in that as well, about you know, we try to, we live very comfortable lives. We live in a time in history where we can be very comfortable. But it's not always in our best interest to live to the max that we're able to. We don't know that our children are going to be able to afford those standards of living. And, you know, it's hard for people to adjust away from a certain standard. Maybe, you know, how do you decide what kind of car to buy? Well, the best one I could afford. Maybe you shouldn't buy the best one that you could afford. You know, we don't always have to buy the best of whatever I can afford. Halavai, it should only be the best that people could afford. Very often people buy better than they can afford. But pampering ourselves and spoiling ourselves could have a very negative effect in the long run. New expenses come up, earning power sometimes goes down. There's a lot of siyata d'shmaya involved in these kinds of things. I was in camp a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know how many of you know what kind of car I drive, but it's a really fancy 2010 Toyota Corolla. It only has like 15 dents in it. So Rabbi Josh Blass, who's in camp, he's a Rav in Muncie, he's a Rebbe in YU, Mashkiach in YU. He saw me in the parking lot. He said, Rabbi Leibowitz, I have so much respect for you. I said, why? And he said, because normally, you know, like you expect these five towns rabbis to try to live to five towns standards and drive a five towns kind of car. And look, you look at the car you drive. Like, what are you trying to say about my car? I love my car. But I mean, that's, you know, that a rabbi should be expected to drive a fancy car. What kind of generation do we live in? So a person is, it's in our best interest not to spoil ourselves too much, not to spoil our children so much. To be able to live with a little bit less is not such a bad thing. I remember right when I got married, so I wasn't yet sure whether I was going to go to law school or start smicha or do both simultaneously somehow, because my wife has a genius cousin who did both simultaneously, got smicha in Columbia Law School, so like it was natural that she and her entire family believed, yeah, why can't you be like, you know, like him? Well, he's brilliant. So I was talking to Rabbi Hecht, who was my 11th grade Rebbe and the pre-law advisor. And he said, you should do smicha first and then you should go to law school. I said, so that's 7 years of not eating. He's like, yeah, it's good. It's good to starve a little bit at first. And then, like, I had no idea what he meant by that at all at the time. But like, you know, over the years, I'm starting to come to an appreciation that it's good to get used to a lower standard of living at some point. It was going to be on my parents and in-laws' dime, so we couldn't really allow that, you know. But I get what he was trying to say. That a person pampers themselves too much, look what it does to this Marta Bas Baitus. Some say it was the grogros of Rabbi Tzadok that she ate, and that's what caused her to die. What was the grogros of Rabbi Tzadok? Rabbi Tzadok fasted for 40 years. For 40 years. So that Yerushalayim not be destroyed. We have all these crocodile tears on Tisha B'Av about how distressed we are about Chorban Yerushalayim. This is a man who put his money where his mouth is, you know. 40 years. That Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. A plea with the Ribon Shalom. 40 years before the Chorban is when Batal Sanhedrin, that's when Simani Chorban became evident. Other Achronim suggest that it was Marsha says about the 40 years of Batal Sanhedrin, the Ben Yoyada says, Eretz Yisrael is Arba Meos Parsa, Arba Meos Parsa, which is a Mahalich of Arba Im Yo, the Meraglim, spied Eretz Yisrael for 40 days, and that's why you got Arba Mishana B'Midbar, Yom Lashana. So the number 40 is very closely linked to Eretz Yisrael and to the zuchus of having Eretz Yisrael and having Yerushalayim and having a Mikdash. It's also interesting that he uses the lashon, that the Gemara uses the lashon that Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. Isn't the point that the Mikdash shouldn't be destroyed? But we refer to Yerushalayim as the Mikdash, and maybe that's a support for what the Rambam writes, that the entire Ira Atika has the status of Mikdash on a certain level. So Soloveitchik explains that when the Mishnah lists Eser Kedushos, so it tries to identify the halachic differences between the different levels of Kedusha. So it says Yerushalayim is Kadosh from the rest of Eretz Yisrael, because Omer and Shtei Alechem are only brought from Yerushalayim. So Soloveitchik said that's what makes Yerushalayim Kadosh from the rest of Eretz. What about Maaser Sheni is only eaten in Yerushalayim? Kachim Kalim are only eaten in Yerushalayim. What about everything else? Omer and Shtei Alechem are only brought from Yerushalayim. So Soloveitchik explained that there's Tzvei Dinim in Kedushas Yerushalayim. There's Kedushas Yerushalayim Midin Kedushas Yerushalayim. And then there's Kedushas Yerushalayim Midin Kedushas HaMikdash. That the way to view the Kedushas HaMikdash is that there's this intense Kedusha in the Makom Kodesh HaKadashim, Mibein Shnei HaKruvim, and it weakens as you build out from it, into the Kodesh, the Echel, the Azar, etc. The Harabais, Yerushalayim, it weakens, but it's that Kedusha that affects Yerushalayim. That's why it identifies Omer Shtei Alechem. It has to do with the Korban. It's got to be the Kedushas HaMikdash of Yerushalayim. That's what many of the poskim said. That's how Rav Soloveitchik said. When Rav Goren came up with the idea that we should change Nachim after 1967, how can you say a tefillah of Nachim, that Yerushalayim is Avela and Charava and Shemema and Shemama and it's desolate and it doesn't... How could you say such a thing? It's not true. It defies the reality. So Rav Goren, he wasn't the only one, but he was the most public about it, I think, most famous about it, they wrote a whole new nusach of Nachim. Chaim David Alevi had a slightly different approach. He didn't change the whole nusach, he just added one word, Shahaisa. It changes everything. Shahaisa means used to be. So instead of saying, describing what is, he was describing what used to be, which is a funny way to make a tefillah. Tefillah is describing a history lesson. But anyway, Rav Soloveitchik was very upset by this. His Talmidim say, Rav Shechter told us he was very upset by this. He said, no, Churban Yerushalayim means Churban HaMikdash. That's the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. That's what we're being misabel. So this Rabbi Tzadok fasted for 40 years that Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. Ki ava achel midi, when he would eat something, have a mischazi me'abrai. He was so thin and malnourished that you could see the food go through his system from outside his body. V'chiavabari, and when he finished his fasting and he wanted to strengthen himself, maisile grogros, they brought him figs, dried figs, but he couldn't swallow and digest the skins of the figs. It was too much for his stomach to handle. So maitzi mayayhu, mayitz mayayhu. He sucked out the juice from the dried figs, v'shadilu, and he threw the skins of those figs on the ground. That's what Marta Bas Paitus found and ate and ultimately died from. There's obviously a lot of symbolism over here. That what keeps Rabbi Tzadok alive, not what appears on the outside, not the skin of the fig, so to speak, but what's beneath the surface, what you don't see. He sucks out the juices of the figs. And what does Marta Bas Paitus look for? The woman who pampered herself and who always had so much wealth and so much money. She's looking for externalities. And ultimately, it's her undoing. Ultimately, she dies from eating the outside of the fig, not appreciating what the inside is all about, the neshama of something. When Marta Bas Paitus died, she took out all of her gold and silver, shadisa b'shuk, and she threw it out in the street. Amra, hay l'may mi ba'ili. And she said, what do I need this for? I can't even buy any food with it. What's it going to do? Ahaynu d'chsiv, kaspam b'chutzos yashlichu. And that's what the pasuk says in Yecheskel, that they're going to throw out their kesef outside, because there's going to be no need for it. It's going to be useless to them to have this kesef. Not only useless, it becomes a point of frustration. I worked so hard for all this money, and for what? I can't even use it. I can't get anything out of it. So it's worse than useless. It's a reminder of all of the effort that a person put in to chase something that wasn't worth chasing. It's frustrating. Abba Sikra, Reish Bar Yonim in Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra happened to have been the head of this group of Bar Yonim in Yerushalayim. Bar Achdei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai happened to have been the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is a very interesting relationship, to be the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us Rov Banim are domim la'achia eim. Most of the time, you want to know what your kids are going to be like, right? You look at the girl's brother, because the children are going to be like the brothers of the mother. So this Abba Sikra had a little Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in him. He was the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So even though he belonged to this group of Bar Yonim, that relationship, that family relationship, provided him, you know, this is what they mean by yichus. You know, there was just a certain quality that lied beneath the surface that just had to come out, that hadn't yet emerged. But there was this quality that he had within him. So Shalach Lei Ta B'tzina L'Gabai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, come to me privately, quietly. Asa, so Abba Sikra, the nephew, comes from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to him, Ad Emas Avditu Achi. How long are you guys going to be so stubborn and demand that we fight with the Romans? V'katlitu le'li alma b'kafna. And you're killing everyone with famine until then. So Amalei, Abba Sikra confesses to his uncle. He says, you know, my avid, di amina l'umidi katuli. You know, I agree with you. But if I say anything to them, they're going to kill me. I mean, sometimes people are so committed to their position, they don't want to hear anyone else's position. And if you express an opposing viewpoint, they just don't want to hear it. They're going to kill him for it. He's their friend. He may have a point. They're not interested. They're already locked in. It's a psychological phenomenon that when a person invests in a certain position, he starts to believe it more than he rationally should. They have this by gamblers. As soon as they put money down on a horse, they start to believe that horse is going to win, even though that horse has no better chance of winning than they did 5 minutes before you put the money down on it. But they start to believe it. Once you invest in a position, certainly if they invested such an act of burning down all the food supply of an entire city, that's a risky move. So they have to believe with all their heart and soul that what they did was right, and they can't budge an inch off of that position, because if they do, then they're admitting what they did was wrong. So they would kill him. And they would say it's a mitzvah to kill him. That's why it's important for a person in life to have unbiased people that you can trust, that aren't afraid to criticize you. I think they call them wives. You know, to have someone in your life who can tell you you're going about this all wrong. Other people might not want to tell this to you. And can make sure that you don't get locked into stupid positions. So Amar Leih, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to Abba Sikra, Chazili takanta ledidi, de epok, Efshar davi atzala porta. He says, you know, come up with some plan. Let's come up with a plan that I will be able to leave the city. I'll be able to get past all of your chaverim, all of these bar yonim, and maybe we'll be able to save atzala porta, save the city in some way, somehow, something. Amar Leih, Abba Sikra said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Nekot nafshach b'ktziri. Here's what you do. Pretend to be sick. And we'll start getting the word out that you're sick. We'll have Tehillim gatherings for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Everyone will know how sick Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is. V'leisi kuli alma v'leshailu bach. everyone's going to come and ask how you're doing, and they're going to, word is going to get out that that you're dying. Vaisi midisarya, and we'll bring something that really stinks, something that really smells like a nevela. Va'agni gabach, and we'll put it on your bed with you so that the smell will emanate from your coffin. And we'll tell everyone that you died and that, look, your body is decomposing and that's why it smells. And your Talmidim will come, only your Talmidim, and no one else will be invited to come with you to come into your inner chamber to carry your coffin. And that itself is not suspicious, because tzaddikim generally would leave a tzava who gets to carry their mita, the Marsha points out. Yaakov Avinu left a tzava that only his children should carry, and not even Bnei Banav, who grew up in Mitzrayim. So he wanted only his children. So that itself is not suspicious. And the reason it's very important that we don't have other people carrying you is because they might realize that you're too light for a dead person. Because everyone knows that a live person is lighter than a dead person. So Rabbi Yochum Zakai did exactly what Abba Sikra's Eitzah was, and word got out that he had died. Nichnas bo Rabbi Lazar mitzad echad, Rabbi Yeshua mitzad acher. Rabbi Lazar's Talmud carried one side, and Rabbi Yeshua carried the other side. Kimatu lepischa, when they got to the gate of the city, bo lemitkere. The Baryonim wanted to test that he was really dead. So how were they going to do it? They wanted to stab him to see that he was really dead. Samalu Abba Sikra said, we shouldn't do that. Yomru, because everyone's going to say, Rabban Dakru. Everyone's going to, you Bar Yonim, right now, you could still look like you're L'Shem Shammai. Yeah, you burnt down the whole food supply, but you were doing it because you think that this is the best way to save the Jewish people, to save the Beis HaMikdash, to save Yerushalayim. But to go mutilate the body of a Gadol B'Yisrael, that's not going to look good. So Bo L'Midchafei, they wanted to push him and see if he would, pinch him maybe a little bit and see if he would scream. Samalahu, he said, Yomru, Rabban Dachvu. That's not going to help. The people are still going to say that you're being so disrespectful. And that would be a Chilul Hashem. Why would they think, what was the Havamina, that this was any better? Because at least not mutilating the body. So Paschule Bava, they opened up the door in Nafak, and they were able to get Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai successfully out of the city. Kimatalas, when Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai got to where Aspasinus was, Amar, Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai said to Aspasinus, Shlomo Alech Malka, Shalom Aleichem King, Shlomo Alech Malka. He said it twice. Marsha writes, Your kofel shalom l'malchus. You're supposed to say shalom twice to a melech. Why? Because a melech needs two types of shalom. We often talk about different types of shalom. But a melech needs two types of shalom. As often as a melech gets defeated by his enemies, he gets defeated by his friends, and by his own followers, and by his own rebellions within his own country. So Shalom Alech Malka is you should do well domestically and you should do well, internationally and with all your foreign dealings. Melech always has to be looking over his shoulder. There's a guy that told a story recently about you're in camp, so it was the last Shalom Shudas of camp, so someone told the story about how in Meir Sharim, right outside the mir, a guy was going to yeshiva, and his rebbe, one of the rebbeim in the mir, he didn't say which rebbe it was, said to him, this was many years ago when President Bush had just won the election to become president, more or less, and the rebbe said, tell me who became president of the United States. So he said, it was before davening, it was early in the morning, he said, George Bush. So he said, okay, thank you. So he's like, Rebbe, why do you need to know that information now, before davening, who became president of the United States? So he said, because every day I say a bracha shalom asani goy, And I try to think to myself, even the most powerful guy in the world, I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I'm not a guy. Shalom Asani Goy, even the most powerful guy in the world. So I try to have that kavana. So I always like to know, I always like to envision the leader of the free world, you know, the most powerful man in the world. So the guy who told the story, he had all the kids' attention, and it totally didn't resonate with me at all, that story, for several reasons. First of all, I would think it's inherently valuable to know who the President of the United States is. Stop. Second of all, I'm always wary of stories that emphasize more what we're not than what we are. I think we need to emphasize more what we are than what we're not. But most fundamentally, I think, who on earth wants to be the president? Like, it would be the last thing I would want to be. It's just like, it doesn't, like, I would never want to be the president of the United States. Like, Shalom Asani Goy, I don't know, Derek Jeter? I don't know, like, someone who seems to have it good. I mean, to be the target of all sorts of criticism and pressures and everything. I don't know. A percentage of presidents of the United States that have been, there have been attempted assassinations, you know, attempts on their life versus percentage of any other profession on earth, you know. It doesn't seem like the safest job either. So a melech needs a lot of shalom. There are a lot of people after a melech. It's not such a cushy job. So Amar Lei, Mechayav Tetrei Ketala. So as Pesainu said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Yechayv Misa twice. Chada Delav Malka. Now, first of all, I'm not a king, but Kakarsli Malka. And you called me a melech. So that's Chayv Misa number one. You're mezalzel in the kavod ha-melech by calling someone else a melech. In cholkin kavod the Talmud b'makom harav. We have such a halacha that you don't give kavod to the Talmud in front of the Rebbe because it makes it look like the Rebbe doesn't deserve as much kavod as the Talmud does. Unless it's a circumstance where the Rebbe's going to get a nachas from that, where adarabah, showing him that kavod shows that the Rebbe's at an even higher level. But he says, to call me the melech, that's disrespectful. V'su, I malka ana, adi yidna mailo asis l'gabai. If you tackle hold on a melech, then where have you been? You know, even l'shitascha. And that's always the worst. That's always the worst kind of musr that a person could get. Is, okay, you have an excuse. So you thought I was melech. Yeah? You thought I was melech? Well, l'shitascha, you did something wrong. That's the Beis Halevi, famous Beis Halevi. Oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. Chazal tell us that when Yosef reveals his identity to his brothers, so oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. So what's the yom adin and yom atochacha? Number one, what you did to me was wrong. But l'shitascha, you're so worried about your father's health and well-being right now of concern over Binyamin. If you really held such a concern, where was that concern for me? Sometimes you have people that struggle with emuna. They have kashas. They have too many questions. Yeah, but the whatever religion they're running to, or whatever spiritual forces they're experimenting with, or that they have no kashas on. Even the shitascha. Samalei says, no. As far as your first time is concerned that you're not a melech, Ibra Malkat, I know that you're a melech. Di lav malkat lo misra Yerushalayim biyadach. Bidach. Because if you were not a melech, Yerushalayim would never be given over in your hands. And obviously it's being given over in your hands. Dechsiv alvanon ba'adir yipol. Vein adir ala melech. That the Levanon can only fall in the hands of an Adir. An Adir means a king. Tichsiv, Vaya Adiro Mimenu. Vein Levanon, El Beis HaMikdash. And the Levanon is the Beis HaMikdash. Shemar Haratov Azev, El Levanon. And here again, you see the interchanging of the word Yerushalayim and Mikdash. Yerushalayim wouldn't be given over in your hands because it says Levanon wouldn't be. And Levanon means Beis HaMikdash. Now, Yerushalayim was not yet given over in his hands. That we're going to read about tomorrow with, you know, the kinos about Titus. But he's been largely successful at least forcing them to a point where it seemed like he was conquering it. And that's what Tosus points out. Afal gav da'akati lo mimsur biyado achabatitus. Mikol mokom kivit kvar tsara le'shalosh shanim v'avakafna v'ki'ilu kvar nimsura. If you're already starving the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, that's ki'ilu, you're already in control of Yerushalayim. So he says, therefore you are a melech. U'dekamrit, imalka ana amaylo kasus, legabay adidna. And if I am a melech, where have you been? Baryoni de'ispan lo shavkinan. The baryonim that were amongst us didn't allow me to leave. Meaning, not everything's going so swimmingly amongst the Jews themselves. There's some disagreements within the ranks. So I'm alas, besides says Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai, not good. I'll give you a mashal. Ilu chavis shel devash v'darkon korach aleha. Lo yu shovernas chavis b'shvil darkon. He says, if you had a barrel of honey and there was a snake that was attached to the outside of the barrel, wouldn't you break the barrel for the snake? So you should have destroyed the walls of the city and burnt it down in order to get rid of the baryonim. Meaning, if the snake is threatening you, it's worth losing the barrel of honey so that you can get rid of that threatening snake. So Ishtik, Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai didn't respond at all to that taina. Kari Ali Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, V'itema Rabbi Akiva. Some say it was Rabbi Akiva who said this, which is interesting. Gemara's two Lashonos, who said it? It was either Rav Yosef who was commenting on this story or Rabbi Akiva that was commenting on the story. Which one would you have put first? Right? Rabbi Akiva is a Tana. Rav Yosef is an Amora. So you have to figure out why that is. Ben Yoyada suggests that it could be that everyone agrees Rav Yosef commented on this. And the machlokas is if Rabbi Akiva also commented on this. Okay. Or maybe there are other answers, but we mention Rav Yosef first. And he said the following pasuk from Yeshayahu, Meshiv chachamim machor v'daitam yisakel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu ruins the chachma of the chachamim. He takes away their chachma at certain times. And he didn't know what to respond to Aspasinus, because here was this great, brilliant man, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he was outwitted by Aspasinus on something that has a simple answer. He should have just responded to him, Shaklinan tzvasa v'shaklinan le ledarkon v'katlinan le v'chavisa shavkinan le. He should have said that you take a piece of wood, you get the snake off of the barrel, and you leave the barrel so that you don't have to break it. So we were hoping we'd be able to we'd come up with an eitzah to get rid of the baryonim without destroying all of Yerushalayim, without destroying the walls. I mean, why didn't we just burn down our entire city to get rid of the baryonim? Because we were hoping there was a better eitzah. We didn't want to have to come to that. That should have been the answer. That was the simple answer. I was thinking that maybe that's why Rav Yosef is mentioned first, because of the pasuk that he applies. Meshiv chacham machor v'daitam yisakel. That sometimes a person is a chacham, but if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want him to know an answer, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take away the wisdom of knowing that answer. And that's something that resonates in particular with Rav Yosef. Because the Gemara at the end of Sota, when the Mishnah says, Mishameis Rebbe Batla Anava, that when Rebbe died, there was no longer anivus. So Amar Rav Yosef, Altisni Anava, the Ika Ana. He says, don't say there's no more anivus in the world because Rebbe died. I'm still here. So everyone asks the Kasha, you know, that doesn't sound like a particularly humble thing to say. That I'm still here and therefore there's still anivus. So Achronim give different variations of the basic idea that you have to understand who Rav Yosef was. Rav Yosef, all over Shas, is constantly being reminded of things from Abaye, his Talmud. He would say something and Abaye would say, oh, Rabbi, remember you taught us this, you taught us that. He seems to have forgotten a lot, and the Gemara tells us that Rav Yosef got ill when he got old, he became sick, and he forgot his learning. So maybe what he meant by Altisi Anava Deika Ana is that to be an Anav doesn't mean that a person pretends to be less of a Chacham than he is, less of an Ashir, less of a Gibor, less of an anything than he actually is. It's that a person appreciates that whatever it is that he has, in terms of certainly those three categories, Chachma, Ashirus, Gvura, that those are all gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not his doing, that's Hashem's doing. So Rav Yosef said, if anyone ever wants a reminder of what it means to be an Anav, to realize that Hashem Nasan v'Hashem Lakach, the same way Hashem can give brilliance and insight and great Chachma to a person, Hashem could take it away in an instant. A person could suffer in their old age and lose all of that brilliance. All people need to do to realize that lesson is look at me. He didn't say, I'm an Anav. He said, no, I'm still around, and people can appreciate that. People, as long as people see how I lost everything, they'll appreciate how everything's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I thought maybe that's where Rav Yosef comes first. Kari Eli Rav Yosef v'yitem Rav Yakiva. Rav Yosef is the one that says, Meshev Chachav Machar v'daitav Yisakel. A pasuk that must have been on his mind. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away his brilliance. Or maybe even he said this before he lost it. But the criticism of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who knows? But this was something that would certainly resonate with Rabbi Yosef, considering his life story. It's one of the saddest things to see, when you see a formerly brilliant person, you know, lose that chachma. I wasn't there, obviously, I was too young, but I was told that anyone who was at Rav Soloveitchik's last Yahrzeit shiur, that it was really something profoundly sad. Because when Rav Soloveitchik would give a Yahrzeit shiur, in general, when he gave a shiur, it was an experience. You know, the different gedolim have different things that make them just totally different than everybody else. Different qualities that make them, you know, Ramosha's Kayach HaPsak. I'm reading a book now about Rav Shmuel Berenbaum from Mir Brooklyn, his Hasmada, the Masmir Ador, they referred to him as. Rav Soloveitchik was a teacher. A teacher beyond, you know, it's true, Rav Michal Shurkin describes, you know, when you were in a room with Rav Soloveitchik, it's as if you were in a room with the world's largest brain. But aside from the brain, from the Soloveitchik brilliance, the way someone once described it to me, he could explain a Reb Chaim to this table, you know? And you'd understand, and then the table would understand it. And when he would give a Yahrzeit shiur, like it was, my uncle always describes, he wrote it up in a number of different places, he would go for a couple of hours, starting with like 10 questions on Rambams from all over the place, and you think the Rambam is finished. There's no way that you can answer any of these questions. And then he would say the Yesod. One Yesod, one thought. And slowly he would show you how that one idea answers every single one of the questions that he started with, and it all comes together. 2 hours later, you now see, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of that? Such a Pashuta Yesod. And then, he would say in Yiddish, but he would say to an audience of over 1,000 people sitting there, listening to a shiur for 2 hours in Yiddish. And this is before, you know, so many Bachrim went to learn in Eretz Yisrael and whatever. And there were so many B'nai Torah, you know, Night Seder and YU in those days was empty. The Beis Medrash was pretty empty. Nowadays, each Beis Medrash is full. And still more than 1,000 people coming for 2 hours. no live tweeting of the shiur to keep yourself entertained. And then he would say, you want some more? And like the audience would scream out, yeah! where does that ever happen? And you go for another 2 hours with Agadata. And they said that last year. He got up to say the shiur. He started. And he stopped. And he got confused. And he tried again. And he got confused. And he kept on trying and he kept on getting confused. And his family had to stop this year. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Because you see that koach, and to see it waning. Al tisni anava deika ana. So what happens? What happens when a Sefer Torah loses its letters? So the Gemara tells us, Luchos and Shivrei Luchos are menachos ba'aron. That's why you have to be mechabel et Talmud Chacham, sheshachach Talmudam. That's what it means when the Gemara says at the end of Kiddushin that Li'eis Zikna, Torah is like any other, it's unlike any other pursuit one has in life. Any other pursuit, Le'eis Zikna, it's not going to be there for you. Torah will be there for you, Le'eis Zikna. Really? What about all the people it's not there for them, Le'eis Zikna? So first of all, it happens to be, it keeps your mind sharp way longer than it probably would have been by exercising your mind so much. Pashupshah. But it's there for you, Le'ei Zikna, because even Shivrei Luchos deserve kavod. Something that was once the cloth of Torah deserves a great deal of kavod. So Torah sticks with a person, no matter what. And even if they're just the model of Hashem Nasan v'Hashem Lakach. I think I read a similar story about Rav Gifter, also an incredible orator. If you ever heard Rav Gifter speak, if you haven't, it's easy to hear him speak. There's recordings available. And also at the end, when he was unable, and he dafka wanted his talmidim to see it, they should appreciate the opportunity to learn when they can, and appreciate that Hashem nasan v'Hashem lakach. So this was the Rav Yosef message. Rav Yosef says sometimes a person could be the greatest chacham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides he doesn't want to give him that chachma at that moment. And that's what happened to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. He didn't have that chachma at that moment. That's what Rav Yosef claimed. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't want him to have an answer. That's why even the Chacham Mikol Adam Shlomo HaMelech Amarti Yachma V'hi Rechoka Mimeni, he doesn't understand Parah Aduma. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu decided that he's not going to understand that. Kadosh Baruch Hu can decide how much to give a person, how much insight to give a person. We have to do the best with what Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us. We often fall woefully short of doing the best with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, because we don't even know what it means to try. You know, we sit down to learn, but then the phone rings, or like it's, you know, like 1 or 2 degrees warmer than we would like it to be. I can't learn under such conditions. We don't even know what it means to really try. Adahachi, back in the Gemara here, Adahachi asa pristika ale meromi. In the meantime, a shliach came from Rome, Amrlei, kum demisle kesar. The shliach said to us, Poseidon, get up, the kesar has died, you are now the new king. They have elected you to be the new king. He was tying one of his shoes, and he wanted to tie the other shoe, lo ayil, and he couldn't get his foot into the shoe. So okay, if he's not going to get the second shoe on, at least get the first shoe off. Lo nafak, and he couldn't get the first shoe off, which is this whole strange piece to the story. Amar Mayhai, he said, what's going on with me? Why are my shoes not fitting? One's too big. What's going on? Amar Lei, lo titzar. He said, no, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, don't worry about it. You're not sick. Shmua tova asilach. You just got really good news. Dichsiv shmua tova tidash enetzem. When you get good news, it fattens your bones a little bit. So you just got really good news. See, by the Jewish people, I don't think that would be considered really good news. Guess what? Your boss died. I don't want the leader. Yeshua wasn't happy when Moshe died. Yeshua goes, tells Moshe, Eldar Meida, listen to what they're saying. They're saying terrible things. They're saying that Moshe's going to die and that Yeshua is going to lead them in. That was a terrible thing. Terrible. I don't want the glory. Let the Rebbe have the glory. But for him, it was good news. For Aspasinus, this was good news. The boss died. So he had a Dishon Atzamos. So he says, what am I supposed to do? So he says, find someone that you don't like, and let him walk in front of you. That will constrict your bones a little bit. So he did that, and it worked out. They call a guy, you have to come to the king. What does he need me for? Oh, nothing. Yeah. He just really needs to see you. And it works. And maybe this brings us back to what we started with. The kritzas einayim, the bar kamtza, at the very beginning. Just seeing the bar kamtza, seeing bar kamtza, got him so upset. It wasn't about the money, it wasn't about, just, I can't see him. I can't see my enemy here. Drives me nuts to even see him. So Amalas, beside the sense of Yachman Zakai, Machad Chachmisu Kulehai, you've proved your wisdom. Ada Idna Milo Asis Lagabai. So where have you been? What took you so long? Amalai Lo Amilach. I thought I told you the whole story. He said, the Baryonim, they wouldn't let. Amalai Ananami Amilach. He said, yeah, but I already gave you a mushal that you should have destroyed the whole wall and you had no comeback to me. Because remember, Hashem took the Chachma away from him to have a comeback. So Amar Lei, as Pesina said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that since you made me into a king, Mezal Azilna, I'm going to go to Rome, Vina Shachrina Meshadarna, and I'm going to have to send someone else to come and destroy the city. But I'll grant you a wish. Whatever your Mavakesh. Ben Yoyada says he did this not only because he was in a good mood, just being an appointed king, but he realized how brilliant Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was, that he must have had a response. He must have had a response to the mushel with the snake around the barrel. There's no way Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai couldn't think of anything. He must have had something to say back. So, and he didn't because he was showing kavod. So he says, you know what? You showed me that kavod. Make a request, and I'll give you something. So Amalei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, three requests. Tein li Yavne v'chachameha. Don't kill the chachamim of Yavne. The chachamim of Yavne, all the people in Yavne were chachamim. And the Jewish people will not survive without Torah. Even Eretz Yisrael, we were able to survive thousands of years in Galus without Eretz Yisrael. As important as Eretz Yisrael is to so many mitzvot HaTorah, And as important as a land is to nationhood, Tein li yavna v'chachameha. Without Torah, we can't survive. Second, he says, v'shushilta d'Ram Gamliel. Don't kill the family of Ram Gamliel. And that way we'll have some remnant of the Malchus Beis David. And v'asvasa d'masin le'd Rabbi Tzadok. And let's take care of Rabbi Tzadok. Let's get medicine for Rabbi Tzadok for all that fasting. And let's appreciate the person who went through all that Mesiris Nefesh to try to save Yerushalayim. Which is an amazing thing. Rabbi Tzadok represents the Koach HaTfila. Yavne v'chachmeh is the Koach HaTorah. Klal Yisrael needs Torah. Rabbi Tzadok represents the Koach HaTfila. Klal Yisrael needs Tfila. Sometimes people treat them as if they're like mutually exclusive. You know, the Bnei Torah are too busy learning during Chazar Sashatz to actually take the tefillah seriously. We need both. We need a Koach HaTorah, we need a Koach HaTefillah, and Shushil to Dram Gamliel. We need leadership. We need a Malchus Beis David. We need people to look up to. We need a Mesorah, a Shushilta. Not just Dram Gamliel, a Shushilta, the chain. Because we're a people of a Masorah, of a strong Masorah. Kari Alei Rav Yosef, V'itema Rabbi Akiva, Meshev Chacham Mochar V'daita Misakel. Once again, Rav Yosef, or some say Rav Akiva, says about him, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes away the Chachma from people. He could have said it so much better. He was granted a wish. He should have said, leave Yerushalayim alone. So why didn't he say that? Because he thought that he was afraid if he tries to ask for too much, he's not going to get it. So he wants to make sure that he has a reasonable request. Something that that the answer might be yes. That he might be able to actually get. Asvasa demasna the Rabbi Tzadok Mayhi, what was the medicine for Rabbi Tzadok? Yoma kama ashkiyua maya depari. The first day they gave him water that was soaked in bran, so he was able to digest it. Lamachar maya disipuka, water that larger bran was soaked in and had a little bit of flour mixed in. Lamachar maya dekimcha, the next day more flour mixed in. They kept on, they slowly increased the density of the food that they fed him. Because it's like, you know, the stories about at the end of the Holocaust when the American soldiers came in and were giving out chocolate bars to famished Holocaust survivors, and they were dying from the chocolate bars. Their stomachs couldn't handle it. So you can't give Rabbi Tzadok a chocolate bar. So slightly, a little more and more. Add the Ravach Mei until his stomach expanded, porta, little by little, and he was able to eat other kinds of foods. All right, we're going to stop there. And there's a lot more, but we'll stop there.